Gary Wurkamp.
And she's Jill Hughes.
Join us for
The Untold Stories of
Shadow Gallery.
With us, Jill, it's time to do another episode.
That's it.
we're live. We're recording.
Oh, okay, cool. Yeah. All right, so welcome back to another episode of Shadow Gallery, The Untold Stories. I've been looking forward to talking about this album because this was actually the first album that introduced me to your band, Shadow Gallery.
This is Sesame Street, that album? Tyranny. Yes.
Okay. So this is kind of very pivotal moment in my life where I got introduced to your band. And I know I was a little late to the game. I was a little bit of a late bloomer when it came to the genre of progressive rock and metal. Didn't really start listening to it until after I graduated college.
Wow. Okay. This was right around the time I was thinking maybe I should find another occupation, you know, instead of being a musician.
What stopped you? Just kidding.
I don't know, but I can revisit that. No,
I'm
kidding.
It might be a little late now to revisit.
Well, there's always tomorrow to think of something. No, this was certainly a challenging, fun record to make, but I wouldn't want to have to do it again. I mean, I guess I would.
I think that it would be awesome if you all continued the story.
Oh yeah, we've talked about that. We have. What will we do next? Well, we did continue the story.
After room five.
Oh, okay. Well, we do continue after room five. After room five is the song Alaska. So it goes Tyranny, room five, Alaska. And then after Alaska, wait a minute. Do we continue that? To the song Two Shadows, which was on the Japanese release. Yeah, we did continue it. But you're saying we should continue it more.
Yeah, I think there should be like a trilogy, you know? There's a lot of decent trilogies out there. We'll not talk about the ones that are not good.
You know, this story takes place, I think originally it was titled just by the dates, like month, New Year's Day, and it goes through the course of a year, I think, and ends on Christmas Day, which is fitting for this week, because it is Christmas week now.
Yeah, it is, so Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, whatever you celebrate out there. We're excited to share with you stories about the writing of the album Tyranny.
Brent and Carl are ready for your first question.
So after you finished the album Carved in Stone, where were you guys heading next?
The beer store.
Just the liquor store in general.
Yeah. I don't know that we had a plan because it was such... My plan was to quit the music industry right after that when we couldn't get on tour.
Oh, yeah.
That's another story.
I definitely wanted to do a concept album. I don't know if I came out and told you guys that, but I'm a big fan of like Pink Floyd, The Wall, so I wanted to do it. I don't think I knew what an undertaking it would be. But thank God Carl came up with a really awesome story, and that's really what got it all going.
So there was an early intention to do a concept album, or it just, like, as you were writing, it just came to be and you got this great idea for a story?
Well, we were already leaning towards long songs that were these big epic stories like Ghost Ship and The Queen of the City of Ice. So a natural extension would be to make a concept. And yeah, Gary's affinity for the concept idea, you know, as a driver, it's a great idea. You know, I think there's something a bit more interesting to a concept album than just a bunch of songs. So I don't know that when we finished Carved in Stone that we had a plan. So
I think our only plan was to tour, and then that got kind of, I think Magna Carta kind of stepped in and said, hey, where's the new album? And we said, oh no, okay, we're on it.
Yeah, so what happened between your whole plan of
wanting to tour, and then you had to create a new album, and all of a sudden this tour fell apart. And, you know, what were the emotions running through, you know, the band at that time? And, you know, what were you thinking, you know, cause you were gearing up to play live.
We had the invitation to go open for Gamma Ray. And we were unable to commit to going and doing that tour. So plan B was to start writing.
Yeah, I think it was taking too much time. And next thing you know, I clearly remember, I think I was talking to you, Carl, and you said Pete Morticelli called you and said, how's the new record coming? And I remember you and I both going, oh no, you know, because we hadn't done anything, you know. And I know this is kind of jumping ahead, but I've always wanted to talk about this. I so clearly remember that switch from going from having to rehearse and put on all the logistics of a tour to music, and Brent and Chris got started. And I so clearly remember your first demo of Mystery. And my whole thought was, I'll never, ever have a first listen to this again. This is my only first listen, but it was so magical. I was like, oh, you know what? I don't want to go play live. We need to make a record. This is such a magical first riff. In my opinion, I think that's what the first song was musically, right?
Gosh, I don't even remember. Maybe it was.
Mystery was the first thing I think you and Chris worked on.
You might be right. I didn't even remember that. I didn't think about that. I think it probably was that, and then probably War for Sale after that.
Yeah.
I think.
I was definitely jealous.
I remember writing Stiletto late, though, I thought. Or maybe it was Chased. I can't remember. One of those two we did pretty late.
Chased was late.
Yeah, maybe that's what it was. It was a long time ago. I do remember, I remember listening to it for the first time, though, like you were saying, once it was all kind of put together, thinking, we might have something here. And then eventually, like with 5 minutes to spare, we got to hear what the vocals were going to sound like from Carl. And then thought, oh, this is really good. Then it got really cool.
So what the biggest question that most fans have is, what is the initial idea behind the storyline? And I know, Carl, you did a lot of the story writing and lyric writing. So I'm going to, there's a couple parts to this question. It was, you know, what were some books or movies that inspired the story? And then also, were there any political events that inspired the storyline?
So it's a multi-part answer. The biggest driver was a book that I had read called Feudalism, Alias American Capitalism, written anonymously by a Canadian author who just simply titles himself David. It was one of the most convincing breakdowns of all it did was leverage available data, but it went to painstaking detail on how the richest 1% in the world were lifting money out of the taxpaying base through many instruments, so very patriotic young man. And I read something like that and I'm like, well, damn, that's a big problem, you know, and it was a lot to swallow. So then I guess that was probably my first step into understanding the larger picture of the way the world operates. I guess the second one was then, having seen the, the director's cut of Oliver Stone's movie JFK, and what has to go into the assassination of a president, the motives, and the person who did the fact finding for that movie, his name was Bob Harris. And Bob was, at the time, he was the all-time winningest player on Jeopardy. And he had a, photographic memory, genius IQ, got hired by Oliver Stone to research all of the facts in the Warren Commission report, debunked it so complete, made the movie. I got to see Bob Harris on his college tour talking about the factual research that he did and, you know, how, like, top to bottom, the Warren Commission was a complete fallacy, easily proven to be a complete fallacy. So I think those things together kind of made me see the world in a different way, in a, had my, you know, childhood illusions of the way the world worked completely shattered, and thought, well, fuck them, you know, I'll write a song or two about it, you know, and wound up becoming a whole concept for the way the world really works, unfortunately.
Yeah, thank God for it. I'm glad you read those books.
Yeah. And Carl, you know, I thought what was really nice, or fair, I should say, is you didn't just write this and say, guys, this is our new album, like Roger Waters might do. You know, I mean, you actually came to the band with a band meeting and a plan and a proposal, said, what do you guys think? And I really respected you for that, the respect that you showed all of us to say, I want us all to be behind this.
Well, here's the important thing. Like, I can come up with good ideas, but I think there's concept albums, and then there's like really magical concept albums where the vibe and the mood of the music is so paramount to the, like, the magic of the unfolding of the story that I can't write in a vacuum of just my ideas. They have to be based on a particular emotion portrayed by the construction of the music. So if I didn't do that, you know, it wouldn't work. It just, nor would it be fair, you know? I think, like, one of the hallmarks of Shadow Gallery is we are together. The sum is always and always has been greater than the sum of our parts. So, you know, me going to Brent and saying, I need something that sounds like an ending. This needs to, like, be sound conclusionary. Or Gary, the day you and I wrote New World Order, or began writing New World Order, you know, it was in my head, you know, so heavily influenced by the keyboard parts you were writing, you know. And if you remember that night, you know, what was going on in the room and just the killer storm that was going on outside. And, you know, it was this thing. So it can never just be one guy coming and saying, let's do this. Here's your new record, guys. It has to be grown organically. So.
Yeah. I just to speak on that New World Order, I remember that super clearly, because we were up in my little loft studio, and we were trying to get this vibe, and then this huge storm rolled in. Crazy wind, like a big thunderstorm. I mean, you remember this? How
broke the window.
It was just like the weather changed like crazy, and that inspired everything. And I think, you know, for a song that really had so many parts rewritten, you and I wrote that whole intro part almost in a single pass. It just wrote itself the first like 2 minutes. Like, I played the first thing that came to my head based upon our discussions, and you were scribbling away, and it was like, oh my god, this, we thought that song was going to take us forever to write, and it was like the whole, you know, first quarter of it kind of came together quickly. But that was a fun moment working on that.
That is the poster child of what, you know, true inspiration is. You know, when you feel something and it becomes mature in large parts right on the moment like that. And, you know, that was a perfect example. You know, you have to be inspired by things. Like, so I have so many moments of it, like, extreme inspiration gifted to me by the compositions that I was handed or had requested. And like the things that went around, you know, how I personally create, the way I went about writing stuff, my contributions to Tyranny. I relied, it's one of the things that takes a long time. And, you know, I got a record company guy bitching at you, you're not done yet. And fans saying, why does it take you so long? You know, the reality is that, you know, the most magical compositions I've heard in my life from my favorite artists, you know, are truly the fruits of true inspiration, genuine inspiration. And Tyranny is all inspiration. I like, there's nothing on there that I didn't have a moment of inspiration from, whatever, external things like Gary's The Storm when we were writing New World Order, or that I go on a big long story about Ghost of a Chance. I wrote it on top of a mountain all through the night. I was on full moon on top of the mountain writing this song. You know, it took me all night to write. I went up to the top of the mountain, I came back down with a finished song. And maybe that's one of the things that the people who like the album can really identify with, is there's a cohesive mood, and it's not just a cohesive mood, but it's a very heavy mood. And it's, I like to believe, you know, maybe it's just my personal opinion, I like to believe that there's a lot of magic in the mood. It's what makes Queen 2 and Queensryche Rage for Order my all-time favorite recordings, because the absolute mood, there's magic to it. You know, it's like goosebumps from the needle drop to the tick, the needle up. And, you know, I always wanted to be a part of a recording like that, you know. For me, at least, I think Tyranny did that. And it was all about the inspiration. It was all about me being a part of other dudes doing stuff, you know.
Tell you this, if I could jump in for a second, I already knew Carl's brilliance, you know, but I didn't really know Gary's writing. I knew from the things that he had shown us, and they were all really good. Some of them were silly, like your Golly Wapna song and stuff, which, by the way, we should use as like a commercial bump or something. But anyway, those are great. I mean, all of it was brilliant, but I never really got that was the first time I really heard Gary write beyond the stuff that he had done, you know, little interludes between Carbon Stone. And I remember going, oh my God, how lucky am I? You know, this is great. There's somebody's shoulders that's more than, you know, wide enough to carry the load, you know, for writing other stuff, you know. And at that point I left thinking, my God, this guy's like the king of all modulations, you know. How many modulations are in that song? I mean, they're everywhere.
It provides such symmetry, having great songwriting come out of different departments that actually fits together. It provides it provides something that is so much more multidimensional than just one person doing all the contributions, you know.
Oh yeah, yeah,
for sure. Well, stuff, man, I remember coming up to your loft. I think it was, how many days did you guys write that? Was it two or one? I don't even remember what it was, but
New World Order, it was like 2 hours.
Yeah, is that what it was?
I mean, I rewrote the solo sections 100 times, but Carl and I put that beginning together very quickly.
Yeah, I remember going to your house and going up in that loft, and you're showing me that stuff, and I remember thinking, my God, this is incredible.
Yeah, pick up your game, slacker.
I got to start writing better stuff.
Oh, no, you had the head start, man. You and Chris had put together what I consider a fair part of that whole first act, and I was like, oh my gosh, I got to catch up here if I want to get involved. And the album was off to a good start, so.
Well, it needed that pinnacle moment, and you guys provided it.
Carl talked about that a lot. He always said we have to have this one central song where it all comes together, and you know, I kind of felt a little pressure, like, how are we going to come up with this brilliant, or what would hopefully be a good, really good song, and you know, I don't know. We just did it. I think we stopped worrying about it, and we just did it.
So we have a fan question that I think fits in really nice here. This is from Andrew Bennett, one of your fans. He said, how do you feel the lyrical concept of Tyranny has aged, particularly in light of world events that have occurred since then? And how do you react to people saying that you predicted so many things in the future well in advance?
Yeah, I've heard that before. So look, if you dig deep enough and you look at the trends of current events in a particular slice of time, they tend to repeat themselves. And I would say the book that I read that was the genesis and my inspiration at the very beginning of all of this, Feudalism, Alias American Capitalism, that the author makes a point. He said, it doesn't matter when you read this in time, you know, these things will always repeat themselves. And thus they did, because the book was written in somewhere in the early 90s. So I think all I did was like look at current events and say, here are some particular outcomes. You know, I got to room five and I was like, you know, there's a couple of things here that who knows, you know, you put them together, right? And there's a very good chance that somewhere in the future, there's a bioweapon that creates a global plague that puts into motion things that, you know, are, you know, challenging for the planet on a planetary scale. And I don't think that it's not like I had any insight. I think it's simply you look at enough facts and you kind of estimate a trajectory and where it might lead. And then you say to yourself, I need to turn this into a, you know, a plausible story where the lyrics can actually make sense in the context of a story, but yet the music that lays behind it has the type of emotional impact to support it and carry it forward. You know, it was just guesses. I got lucky.
Well, it seemed to have had a lot of impact on people. I know that in light of all the things that have happened in the last few years in our world, I've seen some, you know, a lot of chatter out there on social media about how this album, people have gone back to it. They have revisited it because of the storyline and how close it is to the things that have happened.
Yeah, sure. The arc is a carry through to the exact types of documented factual evidence to support the story. So it doesn't matter what time you live in, there will always be people of incredible financial means that wield an incredible amount of power over the unfolding of events. They will own the media and they will shape the narrative, and we will have that over and over, and we have had it over and over. So
is there anything else, Carl, you want to share with us or Brent or Gary about the storyline itself and how the lyrics or the story came about for that? If not, we'll jump into like how you actually recorded this album and some of those fun stories.
So Christmas Day was actually one of the very first things Chris Ingles and I ever wrote together many years before Shadow Gallery did our first CD. The main riff that was probably the very first thing I ever worked on with Chris.
That was the worst version of that. Sing that again. That's killing me. You know that song.
Wait, was that, Carl, were you just singing Detroit Rock City?
So how did you meet Chris or start working with him?
Chris was in one of my neighborhood bands for some kid that lived up the street from me. And I heard some of his stuff. I was like, wow, I'm stealing him tomorrow. So I went and I stole him, and he joined our band Sorcerer, and we started working on some stuff, and Christmas Day was the very first thing that we really kind of put together. Christmas Day and Say Goodbye to the Morning and The Final Hour, those are kind of the first three things we worked on, and then Ghost Ship was the next thing we worked on together. But I think it's so I always loved the song Christmas Day. And I knew that it would somehow plug into something for the tyranny. And I thought it would be terrible to not have it on something. And I was able to craft it into the story. So
is it true? Two-part question. Is it true that it's called Christmas Day because it has Chris's name in it? Wasn't that the embryo? initial. No, okay. The real question is, it was going to be on the first album, wasn't it? But Mike Varney wasn't a big fan of Christmas songs.
Yeah, I think that had something to do with it.
That's right.
And so we brought it back.
Brought it back.
A couple albums later, said, well, we're going to put it on this album, and you're going to have to accept that.
Yeah, and I
had a little more clout there to be able to do it at that point, I think, maybe.
That's true, yeah.
Yep, period.
Happy holidays!
Thanks for listening.
Enjoy this special version of the song Christmas Day, performed by the Joensuu University Choir in Finland.